Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. The time is 1:32 p.m. We are in Butchovich, room 205. Today is Thursday, February 19th, 2026. Members present here at Senate Transportation are Senator Rauscher, Senator Keel, Senator Tobin, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Stedman will be along shortly, I am certain. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Transportation, and join me, please, in extending a warm committee welcome to our recording secretary, Heather Ramseth, and our LAO moderator, Renzo Moises. On our agenda today is a presentation of Anchorage Pedestrian Safety and partnerships from the DOT, as well as the Anchorage Police Department. Here to present this information today are Pam Golden, Shannon McCarthy, and Lieutenant Mark Patsky on Teams. Thank you for joining us today. Could you please come to the table? Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
I'm Shannon McCarthy, Communication Director for Alaska DOT. And with me is Pam Golden.
Yeah, Pam Golden, the State Traffic and Safety Engineer for DOT.
Welcome.
All right. I'm just going to kick us off, and just this is a reminder slide. You've probably seen it before, but we at DOT and even at the municipality of Anchorage and with AMATS, we all follow the safe systems approach, and that is deaths and serious injuries are unacceptable, that we all make mistakes and that we are vulnerable, and that we all share responsibility for safety, and that is safety is proactive and redundancy is crucial within our system. And with that, I'll turn it over to Pam.
Thank you. So, you know, this slide is really, why are we here only talking about Anchorage? And I really want to highlight this. 39% of the population lives in the Anchorage municipality. 35% of our fatal and serious injury crashes are in the Anchorage municipality, but 2/3 of our vulnerable road user fatalities and serious injuries are in the Anchorage municipality. So there's a real disparity with how many of our vulnerable road users are being killed and seriously injured in Fairbanks. I'm sorry, Fairbanks, Anchorage. You know, we do have Matsu, Fairbanks, Kenai, and Juneau kind of rounding out our top five population areas, so that information is available if you're interested. But this is why we're focused on Anchorage today.
Thank you.
The next two slides are really just maps of our bicycle and pedestrian fatalities and serious injury crashes. The bicycles are the triangles, the pedestrians are the circles. This is zoomed out to the whole Anchorage Bowl, but I'd really like to just move to the next slide, which dials in our most critical area. This is Senate District G, which includes Midtown. It's responsible for the majority of the, the majority of the crashes are occurring in this area. The next slide, if you don't mind me moving on, is sort of the tabular form of that.
Senator Tobin has a question.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Chair Bjorkman, and thank you for being here. This is an issue that you've heard me many times talk about as I lived in the Fairview area, which prior to these years was considered one of the most serious issues around pedestrian and vehicular interactions and engagements. I'd be very curious to have pre-pandemic data. A lot of the world has changed because of the pandemic, and especially with folks who are experiencing houselessness and homelessness. And while I fully agree and believe that Senate District G is probably currently experiencing many of these fatalities and serious injuries, I think it's behooves us to think about what has been the historical data and how that has influenced current design and what is currently on the HSIP, which is the Highway Safety Improvement Plan. What are some of the things that we've been trying to program into the TIP in Anchorage, which is part of the Transportation Improvement Plan, and why our communities have been fighting for these projects for so long?
Absolutely, we can get that. The one thing I failed to mention on this slide, and it's pertinent to all of Anchorage, not just Senate District G. My office is going to be doing a deep dive into the pedestrian and bicycle crashes. We're really looking at what are the contributing factors, so we can try to get ahead of the next ones and not just be reactive to the ones that have occurred. So this slide is, you know, on the left in the orange there is the cumulative fatalities and serious injuries on the right in red is just the fatalities. You can see currently District G, but your district, District I, is second. You know, it's right there. So we are very cognizant that these are happening and, you know, working together as a team in partnership with Municipality of Anchorage, APD, AMATS, to try to tackle this issue. So when we think about, you know, what it takes, as Shannon mentioned, the safe systems approach, you know, we really need a cultural shift. This isn't just about roads. This, you know, includes drivers. This includes our ability to respond to crashes, emergency care. It's all of us working together. What I want to address here is we can engineer for the safe driver. We can out-engineer, if you will, the speeding driver by changing the road. And trying to, you know, it takes a redesign of the road to calm speeds to get people to slow down. We can't really engineer very well for the distracted driver, the aggressive driver. And as you see here, the 2.5% that are kind of do all of the bad behaviors. We all have bad behaviors at times. But this was a AAA study done in 2023 that just sort of randomly surveying folks. This is what people admitted to. Maybe they didn't admit to all of their shortfalls, but you know, it is an issue on the national stage as well. And the other thing I found really interesting in this study was 30% of people admitted to driving 10 miles per hour over the speed limit in a residential area within the 30 days prior to the survey. And 39.5% don't even consider that to be dangerous. So it takes a lot of change.
Senator Tobin has a question.
I have two, and I hope that is all right. I see here the footnote on where this traffic data comes from is an analysis that is completed in Washington, D.C. Do we have specific data for Alaska? As I do know, and I'm going to say this on the public record so the public hears us, it's illegal to be looking at your phone in a school zone, and it's illegal to be texting on your phone even when school is out of session. So I'm curious if we have particular Alaska data that we can look at.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, sorry, your name tags are backwards. had to click there. We do not have Alaska-specific data. That is one thing that we're going to look at. We do attitudinal surveys. That's one of the things we're looking at. Could we maybe do a research project to do? The report says Washington, D.C., because that's where AAA is based, but it was a nationwide survey.
And follow up?
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so I'm curious, as you've pointed out, that a significant number of drivers have admitted they're going 10 miles above the speed limit. And I particularly live right there in the corridor of Gamble and Ingra, and folks typically come up across 15th going above 55, 60 miles an hour through my neighborhood that I walk across as it has Bike Boulevard on 10th Avenue. And I'm curious, what are some of the recommendations on how we do reduce folks speeding through those particular neighborhoods and all neighborhoods across Alaska?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin, there's a lot. We're going to talk about some of them later. But, you know, we have to change the road. I think you've heard us say that before. You know, if they're doing it now, they're going to keep doing it. So we're either doing consistent enforcement, lots and lots of enforcement, so that people are afraid to speed through the area. Or we have to do things like narrow the road or different introduce more stops into the road, the different sorts of speed calming measures that could slow folks down.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. To the chair. So the title is Cultural Shift Needed. And I'm trying to understand, was there a cultural shift somewhere along the way where we didn't have as much traffic problems that we're seeing right now? Because I don't really remember them way back when, and I only go back 48 years. So I'm just trying to understand, was there a cultural shift that that we've moved into now that's different from before?
Through the chair, Senator Rauscher. On the traffic side, I can't really think of one. What has often been used as a success story is railroad crashes are one thing that is used you know, throughout the years that number of workplace injuries in the railroad has gone to almost none. But the one I think we can all relate to is tobacco use. You know, many of us when we were kids is when you could see a tobacco ad on TV, and just sort of those different cultural changes that most of our young folks today would say, oh, tobacco is bad. So it's kind of that real paradigm shift of getting drivers to do things better, but it's also one of the safe systems pieces is safer vehicles. The fleet is changing. Different safety features are on our vehicles now to prevent crashes or reduce the severity of them. So it's a lot working together, but I can't point to one specific thing on the traffic side.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. So I guess where I'm trying to go is pot, drugs, alcohol, all this stuff that we see more prevalent now. We're seeing needles in parks where we never saw them. We see needles in public areas where we never saw them. We're seeing a lot of, I think it's a change in culture myself. So is that's the kind of culture I'm wondering that we've shifted into that, is it playing a big part?
Through the chair, Senator Rauscher, some of this is beyond the realm of DOT, and more on the enforcement side or the, I can't think of the word, but, behavioral. Thank you. Big word. You know, we're good at engineering roads and putting money out towards behavioral change. Our strength is not those types of issues, but they certainly must play into it all.
I was just following the page, what we're talking about on the page.
Thank you very much. Lieutenant Potsky, do you want to take a shot at that, cultural changes?
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Lieutenant Patsky, Encourage Police, introduce myself. I'm a commander of our traffic unit. And through the chair, I think I don't have a broad social answer. I will tell you that alcohol impairment and substance abuse impairment is a contributing factor we see in fatality collisions and in non-fatality collisions across municipalities. So I couldn't tell you whether there's a cultural shift. I can tell you that it does exist. It is a contributing factor, and it is something that we are aggressively enforcing.
Thank you for that answer, Lieutenant Patsky. I believe Senator Keel now has a question for you, sir.
We could start with the lieutenant. Yes, thank you. Lieutenant, do you have any historical data? My understanding was that alcohol-impaired driving is down dramatically over the last 30, 40 years, and that perhaps other impaired forms of driving may have supplanted that. What's the trend? What are the trend lines?
Through the chair, I wish I had a great answer for you. I'd have to look at some NHTSA data to probably find that and get you a more solid answer. I think our response would be it still exists. Despite the trend, even if it is trending down, it's still a significant problem that we need to address. It's still on the forefront of our minds and on our radar, not to use a pun too much.
If I may,
Senator Keel.
Thank you. A question maybe from Ms. Golden. You said something when you first presented this slide. I didn't quite track about what you can and can't engineer for. Would you sort of repeat and expand that a little bit?
Certainly, through the chair, Senator Keel. The safe driver is the easy one, right? You know, it's our normal road. They do the right things. They're paying attention. What I was getting at with the speeding driver is it takes changing the road because what they're driving now feels comfortable to them. But we can continue to bring that down by a redesign of the road. Different calming measures, as we were talking about. So those are the two that, on a strictly engineering side, are a little easier to address.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
Would I be off base if I thought about that as trying to solve for latent errors instead of trying to reach after active errors?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, perhaps.
Thanks.
Cool. All right. Please continue.
So one of the things I wanted to highlight was the prevalence of hit and run with our vulnerable road user fatalities. It's a little misleading that on the bicycle side, we've only had 8 bicycle crashes in the last 6 years. And in one of those years, there were 2 and 1 was hit and run. So I want to explain why the two charts look so different. Compare that to our 86 pedestrian fatalities in the last 6 years. About 1 in 3, as you can see, is a hit and run. So that's a totally different set of things to be thinking about. Why did they hit the pedestrian in the first place? What were those contributing factors? But also they've left the scene. And so what else is going on?
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. to the chair. So going back to page 3 in conjunction with this page here, is that 33% contributing mostly to what we're seeing on this page? Is that what we're looking at?
Through the chair, Senator Boucher, are you this particular?
The 33% under VRU, is that what we're seeing here on this page? We're explaining that?
Through the chair, not necessarily.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, definitely not necessarily. The hit and run crashes are really dialed in. So the last 2 years have primarily been Anchorage. There were, out of our 18 last year, only 3 were not in Anchorage. But this is really statewide, so not necessarily tied to how they are playing out across the state and where we're seeing that. And maybe I was looking at the wrong slide.
I'm just looking at the slide number 3 where the percentages are listed for VRU, which the vulnerable road users, which I'm assuming is what we're talking about on this page here. So are we explaining those percentages here?
Through the chair to Senator Boucher, it's just actually serendipitous, I guess, that the 33% is 33% in the Anchorage municipality. It's not a direct correlation.
But we're breaking it down here on this page is what we're saying, right?
Identifying it as one of our, through the chair to Senator Boucher, identifying it as it's just a behavioral issue that we need to tackle with our partners.
All right, thank you.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to note that the most recent fatality was in my district with a vulnerable road user just a few days ago. And I think this is something that is really impacting community. I myself have been hit multiple times by vehicles and had them just drive away. And luckily, I was not seriously hurt, but I definitely had damage to myself and my bicycle. I think it's one that I'm really curious about with particularly this data, as we've seen some also ordinance change in Anchorage around how particular bicyclists and pedestrians can cross in certain spaces. Has there been education to the broader community about why some of these ordinances are being passed so that people do protect themselves? I, as a bicyclist, am hyperactive, but I also recognize that cars really don't seem to think or care about me on the road.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I don't know what outreach was done with the ordinance changes. I do know, you know, it was in the news. We all sort of heard about it, but I don't know what sort of outreach was done. On a very soon slide, we're going to hear from Lieutenant Paskey on some of the things they've done targeting vulnerable road user outreach and law.
Thank you.
So you've probably heard us talk about countermeasures on the engineering side, where we look at things to say we expect a 29% reduction in crashes because of this. On the behavioral side, NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, has their own publication called Countermeasures That Work. And so these are the countermeasures that work under their publication for pedestrian safety. Lower speed limits, I will caveat, is not just changing a sign. We do have to do those activities that make the lower speed limit the actual operating speed. High visibility enforcement at pedestrian crossings is another one that they use on the enforcement side. One that was very interesting to me as I was pulling this together was the concept of a pedestrian safety zone. And after doing some looking into that, I liken it to a safety corridor, but you would just identify a zone where you say, you know, heightened pedestrian activity in this area. And sort of sign and bring awareness to that. It's definitely something I think we'll be looking into. And then, of course, just the different things we do with our kids to make sure that they know how to walk and bike safe to school.
Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure I understood what you said about lower speed limits, because my understanding, and I've looked at a fair amount of research, is that absent really active enforcement, a lot of police presence, people don't drive the sign, they drive the design. And so if I understood what you said, this effectiveness rating of 4 stars for lower speed limits really is a 4-star rating for lower speeds.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see here pedestrian safety zones with $3 signs. Can you help unpack why it's so expensive?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I think it's just because of the signage involved, the enforcement involved. That's just, you know, what was given as a cost. I think there's probably a variety of ways to do it.
All right.
I have a question before we go on. With safe routes to school being one of the considerations here, how many school-age kids are involved in VRU crashes per year? Do we have that data?
To the chair, no, but we can get that.
I'd be interested to know that. So if we're focusing on school-age children as a part of this data in two of these items, it'd be good to know exactly what problem we're trying to solve, and then situations like that are easy to educate, or more easier. Senator Keel.
Thank you. Just to follow up on your response to Senator Tobin, it would be great to get a little more about what goes into the pedestrian safety zones as rated here. And the comparison I have is a great partnership that DOT had with the city and borough of Juneau. We had a situation where school kids walking to school had to cross the road two different times, and the state DOT and the city partnered up to fund, I think it was 400 feet of sidewalk or 500 feet. So kids didn't necessarily have to cross the road at all. It was fabulous. It's also kind of spendy, right? New sidewalk, new road bed. My perception may be skewed by my example. If you don't have it on the top of your head, could you maybe get back to us with what goes into those designations there?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. Yes, we can get back to you. I just learned this term myself as getting ready for this, and I just started investigating these myself. But I think it's a really great concept to pursue.
Thank you. Please continue.
Again, it's probably obvious, lower speed, reduced risk. There was just an update to the vehicle crash risk analysis, if you will, because our fleet has changed. Taller vehicles, blunter noses on them. I will counter that a little with, again, the vehicle standards have changed. Maybe not standards, but safety features have changed. So many new cars now come with things like pedestrian detection. There is kind of an altogether effort, but you know, being hit as a vulnerable road user at even 35 miles per hour is still not likely to generate a very good outcome. It's not as simple as just saying, oh, well, if 45 is 90% and, you know, 25 is 32%, then just drop all the roads to 25 miles an hour. You know, there's still this sort of hierarchy of how some roads are going to have to get people through, you know, the Glen Highway, Eagan Drive out to the valley sort of thing, versus, you know, sort of our neighborhood and local roads. Exposure, risk. You know, speed is really going to be a factor.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you knew I was going to have lots of questions today. So let's talk about this a little bit more detail. The most recent death that happened in the Fairview community was between 36th and 15th off of Gamble and Ingra. And currently there's a proposed barrier that has been identified as the way we could protect pedestrians. For those who are unfamiliar, if you've been in Anchorage, this particular pedestrian barrier is on Minnesota. Very controversial in the community, very much disliked by a lot of folks. We still see folks climbing over it when we sit in the Anchorage Legislative Information Office. So it doesn't seem to be doing exactly what was intended. Yet that's the proposed safety tool that is being deployed in the community versus simply reducing the speed on this road. This is the road that folks fly through into Fairview. And so I'm very curious why the proposed solution by the department is to put this barrier between 36th and 15th on Gamble and Ingra versus simply just reducing the speed, which seems like such a cheaper way of approaching the issue?
For the record, Shannon McCarthy, and the pedestrian fencing would be a temporary measure until the area could be reconfigured. Right now, it is designed for 45 miles an hour, I believe. So if we just changed out the signs, we would have to have a near constant police presence in order to get people comply. As Pam has mentioned, people take their cue of what speed to set from the environment itself. And because there are very few driveways along that route, and there's not a lot of businesses along that route, they tend to pick up speed. So it really would, that area really needs to be reconfigured if we want to drop speeds down.
Yes.
Great transition into the lane drops that are also proposed on this particular area, yet seem to be receiving roadblocks, for a transportation pun that many of my colleagues seem to like to throw at me. Yet why are we not pursuing those as aggressively as we possibly can? Last I've received information from the department and from some of our safety folks in Anchorage, it was 3 to 4 years out for dropping the lanes in the Fairview corridor. Yet we've been working on this since prior to 2014. So if you could just help me understand, we continue to see deaths in this area. We continue to understand it is a very unsafe area, but yet we haven't done anything. And now we're having a fence proposed versus what we know will actually save lives. Can you just help me understand why these barriers continue to be erected?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, one, I promise we're going to get into lane drops in a few slides, pretty in depth. Again, the fence is, it's something that can be done quickly. And we don't go into that lightly, that, you know, that this is the solution. But it is a solution. It's just something easy to do quickly. And sometimes the things that save lives are controversial, ugly, whatever you might want to throw at it. We've heard it all about the Minnesota barrier. So, it's really, what can we do as fast as possible?
2014, we've been trying to save lives in this corridor. I think we've had a lot of opportunity to go quickly.
Senator Keel.
Good. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Since we're on that specific intersection, that's by the Legislative Information Office. Do I remember correctly that you're only allowed to cross 3 of the 4 legs? So in terms of things that could be done quickly, making it legal to cross all 4 pieces would be the only non-insane thing. To get from Starbucks to Cars, legally, I'm supposed to cross from Starbucks to the LIO and wait for the light. Then I'm supposed to cross from the LIO to the Pie Stop or cafe, including waiting for the light. There's a refuge island in the middle because it's so long. And then I'm supposed to cross, waiting for the light again, to the Mr. Chairman, I'm going to use the most polite word I can come up with and say it's cockamamie. People don't do that. I don't do that. I cross where there's a fence. It's not what human beings do. And so to design against what human beings do is to design for failure. So wouldn't it have been cheaper to make it legal across the road?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I was not involved in those decisions. So I don't want to speak to what decisions were made because I wasn't involved in them. But I will tell you that is something we are looking at adding now through our rapid response fund, which allows us to go out and do things that are non-ground disturbing. So painting a crosswalk and rewiring for, you know, a walk, a pedestrian signal on that side is something we can do that's not ground disturbing. So that is something we're looking at adding several places along Northern Lights and Benson where we have that sort of the C crossing as opposed to the whole square.
Mr. Chairman, it's what I was referring to when I talked about the latent error. We have not only not designed out the latent error, we designed in the latent error.
Thank you. That sounds great. Please continue.
One more slide about the behavior side. So the Alaska Highway Safety Office, which is a part of DOT, administers the federally funded highway safety program supported through the grants from NHTSA. So these are the fiscal 2026 requested amounts. for grants to folks like Center for Safe Alaskans, Bike Anchorage, APD, which I will let Lieutenant Patsky speak to what they did in 2025 with that grant. We do media buys. We run pedestrian ads all year long. We're out at fairs, the rodeo, hockey games, trying to get our information about highway safety out. And there's a project down on the Kenai as well. But I'd like to turn it to Lieutenant Patsky to talk about what they've done with the Vulnerable Road User Grant.
Hi, good evening. So I can talk a little more broadly about grants. So we apply for over 6,000 hours in grants through the Alaska Highway Safety Office and through NHTSA to do various enforcement across the municipality. So not just the Vulnerable Road User Grant. But to speak to that one more particularly, in 2024, we made 682 traffic stops under that grant and contacted 274 pedestrians. In 2025, we did 697 traffic stops and contacted 337 pedestrians. So we think we're bringing value to that particular grant. And most of our contacts with our pedestrians are in the education piece to try to find them a safe way to cross the roadway, to kind of get them in a more marked crosswalk or something of that nature, not necessarily enforcement. So that's how we've utilized that grant to try to make it a little bit safer.
Thank you. Any questions on this one? Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And I think it was Captain, is that correct? I just would love to hear.
I keep it. Ma'am, I'm a lieutenant. You can call me just Mark. It's fine. Thank you, ma'am.
Well, Lieutenant, I would love to hear just your personal thoughts. I'm a big advocate for the helmet distribution from you and from also the Anchorage Fire Department. I would love to hear the kind of reason why. Why do officers like giving and supporting young people and getting safe resources to protect their heads?
Because we love positive. I'm sorry, through the chair, ma'am. We love positive contacts with the public. Anytime we can take our role from an enforcement mission to an education mission to build relationships with those community members and those young kids that are going to grow up in our community. That is something that sings to our soul.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant. I have a question. Would a diagonal crosswalk be effective in some of these areas? Would that work?
To the chair. We were actually, we've been talking about that as well. When you have the diagonal crosswalk, you give an exclusive pedestrian phase. It's called a pedestrian scramble. They are, like, I've seen them in Chicago, Seoul, Korea. It's a really cool thing, like, if you're there watching it. I think there's even one that's famous in Tokyo people go to as a tourist destination. So we are, that is one of the things we've been talking about with our local regional traffic engineer, with the municipality, with AMATS. Is there a place that has enough pedestrian volume that we want to try this? So we're open to lots of things, but.
Very good. Thank you. Please continue.
So switching gears to the things that DOT is known for, building things. So these are the proven safety countermeasures from federal highways specific to vulnerable road users. Every single one of these is deployed at some place in Alaska. We are looking at leading pedestrian intervals. Benson and C is one of our early LPIs for the Anchorage area. Certainly we have lighting. And I promise this is where we get to start talking about road diets. So.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. What I don't see listed here is the brick approach. I have noticed actually here in Juneau, walking around to Douglas, they have crosswalks where you can grab a flag and walk with the flag. I've also seen on Instagram some very, what I assume is tongue-in-cheek, where pedestrians pick up a brick and carry the brick along with them. Now, I'm assuming that those are just measures that make the pedestrian feel more safely, but is there actually a function to that for the vehicle if they see the pedestrian holding something very visible or potentially holding a very big red brick?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I am also familiar with the brick approach. The softer, gentler version of that is the flag carry, which you mentioned, which is quite popular in many ski areas, for example. where folks are, you know, milling about, walking around. It again is one of those things we've talked about. It's not considered a traffic control device. It's just considered a piece of reflective gear. So no different than you wearing a hat or a vest. So there are no regulations about it. There are places where neighborhoods have done this on their own. But it is something that we've been discussing.
Yep. Through the chair, for the record, Shannon McCarthy, Senator Tobin, we've actually worked with the community of Girdwood, and we do have that flag approach down there. And I believe it was also in Homer as well, but I'd have to double check on that. And it particularly works, I think, effectively on lower average daily traffic areas.
And again, for the record, Pam Golden, through the chair, Senator Tobin, it's not on this slide because these are federal highways proven safety countermeasures, and that is not one of theirs.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you had also mentioned on the previous slide what I like to call all walks. I love them in Hawaii, particularly around many of their heavily pedestrian and tourist areas. I'm curious, is this an idea that might be deployed around more of our high schools? We have East High School, which is on some very large roads. We also have West High School, which is right on Minnesota. A lot of kids go and they are trying to get to Starbucks, as my fellow colleague here on the dais has also shared. They're trying to get to restaurants and into some of the other areas. Has this been an idea that might be floated as living around those particular institutions? There seems to be a lot of almost near misses happening.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, it's definitely something I can discuss with the local traffic folks, the Muni and AMATS.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you.
All right, here we go. So road diets and lane drops, and I want to highlight the difference between them, at least how we're looking at that. So the road diet was a proven safety countermeasure from federal highways. If you look at all of the research around a road diet, it is taking a two-way four-lane road to a two-way three-lane road with a center two-way left turn lane. That is where the studies have focused. That is where we're even for whether it's pedestrian, bicycle, or vehicle, and I cited that 29%, that is the kind of accepted crash modification factor for a road diet. I want to distinguish that from what we're talking about on Ingra, Gamble, A Street, where we have a one-lane couplet, and so, I'm sorry, not one lane, one-way couplet and multiple lanes. So the one thing we can say would absolutely be the same from a road diet to a lane drop, just reducing a lane, so four lanes to three lanes to two lanes, is that reducing the crossing distance for a bicyclist or a pedestrian. That is absolutely one-to-one. Where we start to fall apart on how do we know this is a comparable reduction in crashes is when you go from four lanes to basically two lanes with the center left turn lane, your leading vehicle is controlling the speed of every vehicle behind it. So you've lost that speed differential that might occur with lane one is going, 15 and lane two is going 25. The other thing that you do not have is in a completed road diet, the pedestrian is crossing one lane, can stop in the middle, wait for the clearance on the other side or gap on the other side and cross the other lane. So they're effectively crossing one lane and then another one lane. They can be doing that in a hardscaped median or less desirable waiting in the middle of the two-way left turn lane, but they're also likely to be seen there. So that is a key difference that we want to make sure we're not selling a solution that maybe doesn't have the exact crash modification we're thinking it could have. And then, of course, there's one study we've found on a one-way road lane reduction, and it's out of Manhattan. And as I told our colleagues over at the House, Anchorage is big. Anchorage isn't Manhattan. They had on-street parking, bicycle lanes, bicycle signals. So it's not quite comparable. So our hesitation is to just go out giving false promise that we're going to have this wonderful crash reduction. So we want to step into it carefully. We want to build that body of research. Then, if we're talking about doing this, and on the next slide, I list the 14 roads it's being considered on. If we do this on 14 roads, I definitely want to see us through a research program do a study and contribute that so that other communities who have these one-way couplets, if we have a fantastic result, we want to share that with the country so other folks can go forward and do these things too. But we don't know until it's done and we have the after-crash data how successful these will be.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And I know that I keep leading, and so I'll let next time that Senator Keel can jump in. So you're telling me there's no data or reports about how reducing the lanes will reduce traffic. There's no data, reports, peer-reviewed journals that have ever said that when we increase lanes, speeds increase, and when we decrease lanes, speeds decrease.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, there are no reports on the resulting crash modification, except the one out of Manhattan that we can find. So not talking about speeds or volumes, but talking about before and after crash analysis.
And crashes for vehicles, pedestrian engagement.
All users. I'm sorry. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, all users.
I find that very difficult to believe. I would love to see the one piece of research that you have found.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Ms. Golden, appreciated the comparison. A couple of other things that occur to me is that when you go from two lanes in a direction to fewer, you also gain a visibility advantage because you don't have other tall vehicles, often tall vehicles, potentially blocking your view of pedestrians. It seemed to me that's a benefit to both the road diet and the lane drop.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, it definitely on the road diet. On the lane drop, you could still have, I call it the peekaboo problem. One vehicle blocks the one behind it. So it's not as clear cut on just going from four lanes to three lanes in the same direction.
Okay.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems like fewer lanes, fewer vehicles blocking views. But the other thing is, in many places in Alaska, we do this every year, lane drop. It snows. So what's the data show?
Through the co-chaired Senator Keel, we haven't studied. You know, it's difficult to say. It snowed this day. We only had 1.5 lanes on Diamond that day. What were the crashes like? So we don't have data to that.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I wonder if that's something we could pull together. We have certainly a lot of records, a lot of weather records, a lot of, you know, crash records and the like going back a long time. You know, when you got to plow a big snowfall, that's where it goes. Unless you've specially designed otherwise, it would seem to me that, that's something that maybe, if DOT doesn't have research resources, there's a master's thesis for somebody at the university in that one, with just a little research help. The other item that strikes me that is a similarity between the two is total distance for a pedestrian to cross, right? 30 feet is safer than 40 feet, one way or the other, unless I'm missing something.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, absolutely. That's our top line. We agree. That's the one thing that 100% between the two.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just so I can ensure that I'm hearing you correctly, the end result that you're looking at is only crashes, not severity of crashes.
Through the chair to the co-chair, our goal of the HSIP program, 100%, is to reduce fatalities and serious injuries per dollar spent, like, you know, that we maximize that. So we look at all severities of crashes, and some of the studies are, it only reduces this type or this severity versus that severity. The 29% I quoted, I know that one just because I know it is all crash types, all severities. But no, we're looking to reduce. Our goal is fatalities and serious injuries.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tobin.
So I apologize. My question was unclear. So you were saying that you're determining whether a lane diet or a lane drop for Fairview is warranted based simply on whether it ends in fatality, not that it reduces crash severity. And your argument is that there is no data that showcases that reducing speeds will reduce the severity.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, That's not what we're saying at all, and I apologize if it came off that way. When we're looking at our lane drop analyses or our road diet analyses, we're making sure that we have capacity, we have safety, we have, you know, continue to have smooth operations, because moving people efficiently and safely is the goal. So separating this and what the crash changes are on this slide from what our analysis that we're looking to do, so that when we go out and we say, you know, without, we know exactly what this is going to do to EMS response time, to freight movement, in addition to making it safer for bicycles, pedestrians, having snow storage, those sorts of things.
I apologize. I don't think you answered my question, but we can follow up offline.
Okay. Senator Ruff.
So the diet lane is a two-way traffic lane, and it's a deacceleration lane, not an acceleration lane, correct?
Through the chair to Senator Roucher, that varies by state, actually. So it is interesting when you get people who move in who are used to a different concept of that, but it's to pull into to make your turn out. When you turn it off the road, when you turn onto the road, you are supposed to, in Alaska, pull through it right away and not make what's called a two-stage left turn.
Two-stage left turn.
Where you pull out, sorry, through the chair, to the chair, Senator Roucher, where you pull into that.
I'm afraid I asked a question.
Right, where you pull into the two-way left turn lane and you sit there and wait for then a new gap for the other side. That's a two-stage left turn. So exiting, you know, a driveway on this road, you're supposed to pull out all the way through into the through lane.
Lieutenant Patsky, do you want to take a crack at the difference between a turning lane and a merge lane?
Through the chair, no, sir. I think that's probably a definition best left to the pros, and we probably read the manual before we started doing enforcement in that particular area.
Very good. Maybe we get a alleged legal opinion. I have my own. Well, Senator Roucher.
In Eagle River, this exists somewhat, and you have head-ons, because if two people pulling in there to do what you say, double, whatever, and they don't quite make the second part because they meet in the middle, because they're looking at one's looking at traffic coming one way, so they pull out. The other one's looking at traffic the other way, so they could pull out onto the roadway, and they're going to use the middle lane to get there, and that's why they head on, because they aren't looking, they're never thinking something's coming the other way, because it's a one way in their lane, right, that they're approaching.
Through the chair, Senator Roucher, there can be head-ons in two-way left turn lanes. They tend to be lower speed, so lower severity.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for bringing that up, Senator Roucher. It is an important topic, because we have active two-way left turn lanes in Kenai and other parts of the Kenai Peninsula, and I would vehemently and strongly argue that these lanes are turning lanes, and they absolutely are not acceleration lanes. They are not merge lanes. They are turning lanes. And the only reason you belong in this lane is if you are immediately going to make a left turn. If you are turning into the main path of traffic, you do not turn into the turn lane. That is not your lane. You need to stay in your lane, and that is in the main flow of traffic in the two or one travel lane that is not the turning lane. Thank you for coming to my turn lane TED Talk.
I see where you're going. Okay.
So yeah, no, it's a big deal. I've seen multiple wrecks. There have been, it's a bad deal when people use turning lanes as merge lanes. It's no bueno. So thank you.
Okay. So this is just to highlight the 14 different locations that that came to light over the past 12 months or so, where either a road diet or a lane drop was being considered in Anchorage. In our Vision Zero meetings, we talked about, has anyone modeled what happens when we do them all? And so AMATS has taken that on. They have that under contract. The consultant that they're using owes them a draft. I believe it's sometime later this month for their review. And then, you know, after they do their first review, then it'll go out for a broader review. So in addition to what we are saying, like, we just want to know all these answers before we go forward. This study will then say, all right, what happens to the whole network? You know, have we created any choke points that were unintended as this goes forward?
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And I think the question I would ask is how many people have died since we've done nothing? I would like to know the dates of each of these when they were first proposed. As I mentioned before, the gamble in Anger Street has been in conversations for almost over 10 years. So I'd be curious to know, when were these different projects originally suggested by community members, by the public, by AMATS, and to understand that right now, today, we seem to be slowing them all down for an additional analysis, which I believe has been clearly and thoroughly discussed over the last 10 years for many of these projects.
Through the chair to the never mind, she can have it.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I know that we can definitely pull all the dates when these were originally proposed to DOT, that when those became a project proposals. I'm not sure if we can pull all the dates from when they were first suggested, but we'll certainly work on that internally.
Thank you.
For the record, Shannon McCarthy. I wanted to just talk about the partnership that we've been able to develop with the municipality. And obviously, we've always had a partnership with the municipality and with AMATS. But about 18 months ago, when Anchorage was experiencing an unusual uptick in pedestrian fatalities, we did get together as a group. And we started to, DOT engineers, and it's our outreach folks, and it's AMATS folks, and it's some of our statewide experts as well. So we come together once a month, and we've been discussing different options, what can we do kind of near term, immediately near term, long term. So I want to just talk about some of the things that we have in the works, either completed or are processing right now. And one of the ones is Rest on Red. This is a situation in an urban area in which late at night, and I know we've all come home from the airport, you know, past midnight, and you might come down a one-way couplet and all you see are green lights. The tendency for a driver is to pick up speed. So it might be marked for 35 or 45, and a driver can sometimes go much faster than that because they have that visibility. They're like, I've got all green lights. So the Rest on Red makes it red on all legs of the intersection. So a driver does have to slow every time they reach an intersection. And it really prevents those high speed, late night pedestrian versus vehicle crashes because the driver is slowing and paying more attention. All of us tend to, if we see an open road, I think there's a tendency to, you know, cross wherever to pick up speed. So having these Rest on Reds does try, the aim is to really prevent those high speed, late night crashes. Then the Elmore Road pilot project, this is where we actually had an active project this last summer, and we did a speed study on it. The northern half qualified for a speed reduction, so we did that with the project, and then the southern half did not meet the warrants, but we wanted to try it out. So we've made some very minimal improvements to the road, and we're monitoring. We've changed the speed limit, and we're monitoring to see if we can get a reduction in speed there. We partnered with APD. Lieutenant Patsky can speak to this, but we partner with them. They did some enhanced enforcement for the first, when we first launched this back in August, and we're going to go ahead and continue pulling data. So we have, I believe, a full year of data before we make any decisions on that. But this is something, a model that we could use, particularly if we decide we need to add more to it, you know, kind of what the trigger point is for when people start to make that decision to drive slower. C Street and Benson, we've already mentioned a couple times, but this is an area where there have been some fatalities where a pedestrian has entered the intersection appropriately when they had the light, and the inner driver, so there's a left turn, and then there's a dual straight and left turn. And so that inner driver lost contact with the pedestrian, did not realize they were in the crosswalk, and then made that turn and had that conflict. So this will, as Pam has talked about, there's a couple different options at that intersection, and we want to use this at other intersections if we're successful and model that elsewhere so that, and, you know, could potentially be that leading pedestrian interval where that pedestrian gets out in front of the traffic before anyone else moves, and then drivers have that visibility. So And then the VRU, the Vulnerable Road User Safety Audits, those are starting this spring at Muldoon from 36 to Glen, and then at Tudor Road from Minnesota to Kingston Drive. And that's where we bring an outside group of experts, and they take a look at a road with fresh eyes and give us recommendations. The Tudor and Muldoon Community Councils have requested a speed reduction, and so we are doing a public hearing, and that's in accordance with the DOT's policies and procedures that we do a public hearing, and that should be starting here. We have it listed as the first quarter, and I'm working with doing an amendment with the contract so we can get that under our belts. And then we have increased our pedestrian work zone pedestrian work zone outreach campaigns, and we're adding seatbelt usage to that this summer. This was the first time that we actually created our own content. I really tried to tackle the circumstances in which we saw those 2024 and 2025 crashes, and tried to address some of those, particularly the left and right turning is what we addressed in some of our ads. We'd have published now our crash data publicly. So if you're interested, you can take a look. Members of the public can take a look, and that's at public.alaskadata.net. And it is helpful to take a look at that, especially as we're analyzing solutions. And then DOT, through our Data Modernization Innovation Office, have been really pushing for and distributing retroreflective gear. We did that at both of the fairs, in the Fairbanks Fair and then at Palmer. But we also partnered with the Anchorage Coalition in Homelessness to ensure that we're providing reflective gear through their Homeless Connect event this last fall. We've also provided a lot of materials to the Transit Center. They have a population that is obviously walking a lot. So providing those, and then as requested to, we provide those reflective materials, and we hope to continue doing that moving forward. And then I just wanted to mention that our Central Region DOT staff last year attended over 23 community councils, presented on safety, and distributed reflective gear. So it was a good touch point, good feedback. Obviously a lot of mixed feedback, many different ideas, but really important to get out there. And I should mention that AMATS accompanied that outreach with us as well. I should say MOA was actually AMATS and the municipality of Anchorage. At this point, the last meeting that we had with the Vision Zero Task Force, which was about 2 weeks ago, we talked about potentially adding a couple members onto this kind of think tank, if you will. And we're looking at adding someone from the Anchorage Fire Department because they have EMS, and that's a good component of a safe systems approach, is to talk to EMS and find out what we can do better. And then also we're interested in adding someone from the healthcare system, from the school district, because students, move a little bit differently than, adults do. As you had mentioned, Senator Tobin, particularly at those key times of getting to school and then going away from school. And then potentially also adding someone from the military base, because that is an entirely different road user, and it may be really helpful to have that perspective.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I don't see listed on here is the lane drop you did downtown for the bike lane. I'd love to see more data on that. I know it was in partnership with Vision Zero for many, many months, a lane drop.
Yeah, we, through the chair, Senator, we can certainly add that.
Let's take a brief at ease. We're back on the record. It's 2:35 now here in the Butchovich room. We will resume where we left off on slide 16.
For the record, Shannon McCarthy, Chairman Berkman and Senator Tobin, I did want to just add a tiny bit of clarification. The bike lane actually preceded this task force that we put together, but we will add it to the list. Absolutely. So I actually like to bring this up with all kinds of groups, but to remind people that highway safety improvement program projects can be controversial, and they are. I've worked on a number of them. They tend not to have a PI professional from a consultant, so I have ended up staffing for our engineers, staffing and done that PI work for them, public involvement work for them, because the goal is to maximize lives saved and reduce serious injuries per dollar spent. We're oftentimes looking toward interim solutions, sometimes without aesthetics, although we are dedicated to adding those, particularly after the feedback we got from the Minnesota pedestrian fencing. Projects are often within the existing right-of-way, so we haven't chatted with surrounding property owners as much as we typically do. We all are also looking at low-cost solutions. So again, there's that aesthetic value that would normally people would ask of, like, have you considered this? And oftentimes we say no because we're going for the lowest cost solution. So, and we're also looking at, like, maintenance costs of can we install it in the area? Will it save lives? And will it be cheap to maintain? So those are the kind of things that we're coming in with. It also will oftentimes change the way a person uses the infrastructure. So channelization for vehicles, for example, we've done this on Tudor Road and on Muldoon, where we're preventing those left turns. So we're channelizing people into a left turn that is safer, perhaps at a cross street or maybe a signalized intersection, and preventing them from accessing businesses if they're going, like, northbound, for example, that they have to do some adverse travel. And also the safety fencing for pedestrians. We know that this is oftentimes not an amenity, that it is adding a time onto someone's travel, but we are really looking at, can we save lives by putting up this fencing and getting people down to the signalized intersection or to a lighted area, for example. And things like roundabouts, we know empirically time and time again that roundabouts have reduced crashes. So those kinds of things that we're looking at. Projects are data driven, so public involvement, as I mentioned, starts after the solutions are identified. This is not typical of DOT. We're oftentimes coming out and doing a scoping meeting first. And so when we come out and we say, we are going to channelize your road, it's oftentimes not very met with a lot of enthusiasm. So we recognize that.
Can confirm.
I know that you have seen the next two slides in your previous presentation, but I wanted to bring them here today and then ask if you had any questions about these. We're going to talk about Ingrid Gamble after these two slides. And then I did want to call your attention to A Street. This was actually a lane drop that we did study. It came back as positive, and then we added more safety features under the project, renamed it, and it's moving forward. So really happy about that one. And there's just some additional ones. I wasn't sure if you had any questions on those as well.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've received a few press releases from the Department of Transportation Public Facilities and from the mayor of Anchorage about HSIP-related or adjacent projects, and I don't see those listed here. Can you talk a little bit about those particular projects, where they are listed, and when we can anticipate seeing those particular ones, either inclusion in the budget or at a presentation at some point?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, we absolutely can provide that to the committee. I do have a list. The one that comes to mind, of course, is the pedestrian fencing right on between Ingrid Gamble, around 20th is one of those. And then I believe there were a couple others regarding some temporary feedback signs that we can move around the city, because we know that temporary feedback signs do affect driver behavior, but if you leave them in the same spot for a long time, it starts to reduce drivers' behavior. So there's a purchase of that, and then there's also some lighting, right? So yeah, that's right. So I don't know if you saw the press release about the pedestrian lighting in Kodiak that we tried. We actually wanted to put that pedestrian lighting in Anchorage first, but it was suggested with our experts that we wanted to try a roadway with a lower annual average daily traffic so that we could test it, see how it works, see how, if there were any problems with weather or, if it was picking up bicyclists, that kind of thing. So we're testing that out. We're incredibly enthusiastic. The installation went really well, and Kodiak residents really indulged us and came out with, bikes and short people, tall people, and that kind of thing. So we're hoping that that is successful. We can employ that in Anchorage as well. And I'm happy again to provide that list. Oh, and I should mention that that if it's not covered in the budget, it is state funded, so that will be provided for with state funds.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Provided for with state funds, is that funds that you already have, or is that funds that will be included in a supplemental or some other point in time?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin. Yeah, I should have said through that supplemental budget. I should have absolutely said that. Yeah.
I apologize. So we can anticipate that this will be proposed because it's currently not included in the budget.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin. Yes, it would with existing state funding.
Thank you. Please continue.
For the record, Shannon McCarthy, I just wanted to bring up these two projects. This is the Fifth Avenue project. It is pedestrian fencing. It would be we would also add lighting on the southern side of the area, because of course we want to keep that lighting away from Merrill Field. We're working with them on the specific lighting that they need to ensure that pilots are not getting confused about where the airfield is. So this project is set to be obligated in the late of the federal fiscal year, so September, and we are committed to making sure we go out to the community councils and asking about aesthetics. The imprinted concrete has seemed to be a little bit more popular, similar to what exists at the Muldoon Interchange right now. So we just wanted to show that what it could look like, and with fencing above that concrete barrier, everything would have to be crash worthy. So we are a little bit limited on options, but we will go out and discuss those with the community and see what we can do.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And I know this area of downtown very well. It's how I get to the Glen bicycle path. And I see here that you're adding additional lighting. And one of my deepest concerns is putting lighting in the middle of the crosswalk, the sidewalk that bicyclists and pedestrians use. And I know that this is not to scale, that is not necessarily rendered, but I really do hope I see you at every single Fairview Community Council meeting going forward so you can talk with users of this area about how we traverse in our community and the ways that we use these spaces.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, excellent idea. I'll make sure that we have staff there.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the benefit of those of me who don't know this area very well, I see improved lighting. I get how that's a pedestrian safety improvement. What else is improving pedestrian safety here?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, it's literally preventing people from being killed by traffic, by drivers. Yeah, crossing. We made sure that we had a picture of the Circle K facility. There's a lot of people crossing. The lighting is inconsistent, and this area has a long history of pedestrian fatalities.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it's, are we talking about quarter mile, 3/8 of a mile? How far is this?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, if I guess, I'm going to be wrong, so I'd like to check with the project manager and make sure I provide you the correct answer.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm a little confused. People cross the road here, which indicates that there's some sort of need for a pedestrian accommodation, and the answer is to prevent anybody from crossing the road here, which suggests that human behavior being what it is, we expect people to climb over the wall and be safer? What am I missing?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I know that there are some people that will climb a wall. However, the majority of people will go down to the where we channelize them to, which is at a intersection crossing.
Thank you, Ms. McCarthy. One of the things that I wonder about when we're talking about these instances of pedestrian deaths is I wonder about the public benefit of the lack of information that gets released to the public after these things happen. That is to say, I think the public would benefit from all the information about a crash, about complicating factors, the confounding nature of any incident, so that people can know maybe more of a root cause of why these incidents occur. And Ms. Golden, I think I heard you say that you are doing a deep dive into these pedestrian deaths, because these are a big deal. Like, these are a huge deal, but to what extent are we designing roadways, building out infrastructure to prevent these things from happening, when I don't know that we could ever build a roadway that's completely safe and can keep people off of the roadway. I wonder about that, right? So I've been a school teacher for a while now, and lots of kids come through my classroom, and you kind of see a lot of life happen through those kids' eyes. Talk about current events, usually weekly in my middle school class, and life comes out. And there had been a pedestrian death on the Seward Highway toward Girdwood, and kids were talking about it. And it turned out it was this really horrible situation that was not an accident on one person's part. And so how often do we have things like that happen, that the whole story doesn't come out? Or how often are there people in the roadway that they're impaired for one reason or another, or they're going through, they're having a really, really bad day? I'm wondering, and I don't know the right answer, but how are we as a society supposed to engineer for that? Like, how do we do that? And do we do that at the expense of businesses that might be along this roadway that count on people being able to turn in and out of the businesses? Do we do that at what expense? So those are kind of questions that I have as we look at this and as we think about possible solutions. I think the public would benefit from more information about what is happening with pedestrian deaths and what is occurring when people get killed in the roadway, right? So I'm hoping that we can have more data like that as we go forward and talk about this.
For the record, Pam Golden, to the chair, your question about how frequent does it happen where there's some unusual circumstance. Every few years, we have a crash that we say doesn't count for FARS, which is the NHTSA Fatality Analysis Reporting System. For state data, we still count that crash. Pedestrian died on the roadway. But it doesn't count in the national statistics because there was foul play. There was the person died before the car crashed. There are those things that do happen. To your point about better understanding what's happening, that is exactly why we're doing the deep dive. I do expect that we will go public with, you know, what do we find? It's not, we don't need to hide that. We're doing this deep dive. We're starting with Anchorage. We should go beyond Anchorage. We got to start somewhere. But that is exactly what I'm hoping my staff can find. They're going to be reading crash narratives, digging deep into where these local folks, where they folks traveling through, all these different sorts of variables. One of the things I asked the Vision Zero Task Force a couple weeks ago is, please tell me what kinds of things you want me to look at as well. You know, we kind of have some ideas, but give us more ideas so we can really dial into what are all these circumstances about around these bicycle and pedestrian fatalities and serious injuries.
Yeah, very good. And I know it's not just Anchorage, too. I lost at least two constituents this fall due to pedestrian accidents, one in Kenai and one in Palmer. But without further details, it's hard to understand why and then what can we do differently as a result of those things. So that's kind of where I'm at on this type of stuff.
To the chair, again, if I might add, one of the things we've started doing just in the past couple of years is when there is a vulnerable road user fatality, our traffic engineers are connecting with law enforcement and going out and reviewing the crash at the location, if possible, to really gather that whole picture, to say, is there a simple engineering countermeasure we could do here? And that's why we have that rapid response fund that we've spooled up. But that wasn't something we did in years prior. So we are trying to get freshly out with law enforcement to say what actually happened here. Can you give us the details so we can really look into this?
Great. Thank you. I think we had Senator Tobin, Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we're still on the slide, and I just want to point out a few things that when we're talking about analysis. So for folks who can't see, the other side of this where it says improved lighting is where the Anchorage sign is. Many visitors come in and they want to get a picture with that sign. Unfortunately, as you can see at the very edge of the little yellow box, there are barriers to going into that parking lot. So they do park at the Circle K. And because the next crosswalk is almost a half a mile down the road, they cross over so that they can get to this beautiful tourist destination that we highlight in almost all of our publications. Additionally, they just put a homeless and houseless shelter right down the street from this. The only grocery store that those folks have access to is this Circle K. Many of those folks are not able to walk long distances. They have young children with them. They are in vulnerable situations. And so they walk to those barriers and then walk across the Circle K waiting for traffic. I understand that this is a proposal to stop that action. However, those pieces, I'm sure if you have taken them into consideration, I would rather see us put additional pedestrian assets so folks can cross midway instead of putting up a barrier that I quite frankly do not think folks are going to be deterred from. They will try to climb over it as we continue to see on the Minnesota wall. I hope you come to our community council and listen to our feedback because this will not stop death. This will just be a big, beautiful concrete thing in the middle of a roadway.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, one thing to add to this discussion is that this is absolutely a temporary measure. Obviously, the Seward Glen PAL is still working through, and so we would anticipate that larger project would lessen the traffic on this roadway, and then we could add some of those amenities to, you know, connect the community with the destinations that they're going to.
Senator Rauscher.
Yeah, I think I'm just not gonna. I'm good. Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know this area like Senator Tobin does, but you know, the story that comes to mind is 18 years ago, a big infrastructure project went in my district. And because of the distance between lights, a pedestrian crosswalk had to be removed right where a whole neighborhood, the middle school folks, like to cross to a store with a restaurant in it. And the theory was, what the design manual said, was don't worry, the pedestrians will walk about 150 yards down this way to the legal crosswalk, use it, and walk about 150 yards back that way to where they want to go. So after the second pedestrian vehicle incident, I don't remember if one of them was a fatality or both of them were a fatality. We finally got folks at DOT to put in a HAWC, a pedestrian-activated light that stopped traffic. And so if as what Senator Tobin is describing, this is a place where people cross, I think we are designing in latent error. I think we're designing in an unsafe situation. That's what I'm hearing described here. I'm not suggesting that we put desire path crossings everywhere there's ever a track in the snow, right? That would make for crazy roads. I don't mean that. But there's got to be some place where people who cross can cross because they're not going. My map measurement is different than Senator Tobin's, but they're not going 150 yards each way out of direction. Not in the cold, not in the snow, not in the rain. It's not what humans do. And the humans aren't surrounded by a seatbelt and an airbag and a frame. So I guess I'm concerned at what I'm seeing and seeing called pedestrian safety improvements.
Please continue.
The next project I wanted to highlight, and this was something that has been discussed a lot in the press, and I know here in the committee as well, is this the Ingra Gamble couplet. The one that I'm highlighting here is actually a couple projects happening. along Ingrid Gamble, the one that we're really pushing for to get obligated in September or by September is this undergrounding of the utilities, adding the signal heads above each lanes for each at the intersections for each lane. We find that this helps with red light running. Red light running, as you know, it carries a tremendous amount of risk both to motorists and to anyone who's trying to cross, pedestrian or bicyclist. So, and then adding those reflective. Are they retroreflective?
They are.
The retroreflective back plates to increase that conspicuity. So the driver is snapped out of, you know, any kind of, sometimes drivers get a little bit hypnotized, if you will, when they're driving, they're thinking about something else. And so we really want to make sure that those signal heads really pop so that they are aware that the light is changing and they're coming to a slower speed and stopping. And that would enable us to get rid of those utility poles that are both close to the roadway and in the middle of a walking sidewalk. So that's the first project, and I just wanted to highlight that for you. We're putting a lot of pressure on ourselves internally to get that obligated. As previously mentioned in this committee, those are going to be advanced construct so that we can obligate that this year.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And again, as this is about a half a mile from my home, one of the key features that has been long fought for in the community since 2014 has been reducing one of the lanes. So I'd love to hear about what is the progress forward. I know that there's research that wants to occur. I've heard there may be some temporary lane drops. Can you walk us through what the community should expect on this particular corridor?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, one of the things that we're working with Chugiak Electric, I know that the commissioner and the mayor are meeting with the leadership at Chugiak Electric in about a week and a half, and they're talking about doing the undergrounding of the utilities this year. And what the public will see, what the community will see, is probably a two-lane reduction in the area while they work on undergrounding those utilities. That actually will also give us real-world data on what happens with the roadway with a reduction of two lanes. And we're hoping that that work would only be just this summer. But then from that point forward, we would obligate this project. And you would see the telephone poles be removed, adding lighting that is not in the sidewalk, and it is beneficial for both drivers and for people walking on the sidewalk. Right now, the way the lighting works is that there are huge gaps, and I drive this road multiple times a day. I swear I'm always on this road. And the one thing that I've noted is that it's a heavily used pedestrian corridor, and there are such gaps in lightings that people who are making a mid-block cross are completely cloaked by darkness. And certainly as you're driving through, your night vision is ruined, essentially. So you really have to be on high alert to make sure you're seeing the pedestrians. With this new lighting, it really provides that consistent lighting throughout the corridor so that a driver can see a pedestrian, certainly if they're making a mid-block crossing, and it also provides the lighting for the pedestrian or the biker on the sidewalk itself so that they can see what the conditions are in front of them.
Follow up?
Yes.
Thank you. And what is the future of the lane drop for this particular corridor?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I apologize. I just was thinking of the next couple steps. So that is under consideration right now. They are completing the analysis, I believe.
The project engineer's review.
It's with the project engineer for review. Yeah.
Please continue.
This is actually our final slide, and I just wanted to bring your attention to it. We know that in 2015, as well as 2024, I say 2015. My apologies. I'm going back in time. In 2024. And in 2025, we had 15 pedestrian fatalities in Anchorage. In 2025, we had the two additional ones in Palmer and a pedestrian fatality in Kenai, as well as a bicycle fatality in Anchorage. There was a phenomenon that happened, and perhaps it was just lightning striking us for the positive, but I wanted to point out that between November 22nd of 2025 and February 16th of 2026, we had zero pedestrian fatalities in all of Alaska. And this was, I believe, a record. it was to the point where it was so surprising to have this length of time where there wasn't a pedestrian fatality that I believe our FARS coordinator actually called up the police departments and asked for clarification and asked them, are you sure? Because it was such a long period of time. I believe it was 86 days without one. In addition, at the same time, from December 24th to the February 13th, we had zero traffic fatalities of any kind, so no vehicle fatalities at all either. We would like to figure out how to make this we want to repeat this, and you know, perhaps it was just a statistical anomaly, but we're really hoping that some of the things that we're doing out there are making a difference. And we'd like to repeat it. And we also wanted to just mention that this just shows us that zero fatalities is possible. If we can do it for 86 days, we can do it for another 86 days.
Very good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Do you have any further questions?
My only comment is thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to ask many questions. As you can hear, I'm incredibly passionate about pedestrian safety, particularly as I prioritize walking and biking through my community. I think it's the best way to know your neighbors. I think it's the best way to serve the people of Alaska. And I want to ensure that all of my neighbors and residents are able to get to where they're going safely. I recognize that vehicle and vehicle traffic is really critical and important, but it is not the only thing that we should be designing our communities for.
Thank you. Mr. Patsky, anything in wrap up that you'd like to add?
No, sir. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you betcha. Glad you're here. All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And when you have more data or would like to follow up on this issue, clearly there is a lot of interest in it. So please let us know and we'll have you back to talk more about these types of things. So thank you once again. That concludes our business for today here at Senate Transportation. So folks can get out and enjoy this beautiful snowy day. You can go sledding down the hill and yeah, should be fun. Okay, next week, we got lots of cool stuff coming up next week. Our next committee meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, February 24th. We hear a presentation on CDL integrity from the Alaska Trucking Association. And we'll hear some bills on Thursday of next week, too. So that'll be exciting. As there's no further business coming for the committee, we are adjourned at 3:03 p.m.